I was thinking about the different words that come into our liturgical vocabulary during the different seasons of the church year. In Advent, we use words like longing and hope and darkness and waiting. At Christmas, we sing about joy and angels and the manger and the baby. It's also the only time of the year I ever use the phrases swaddling cloths. At Lent, we have repent and suffer and journey and cross. At Easter, we have risen and indeed and hallelujah. What about Epiphany? What kind of words does this day, this season evoke? And maybe Epiphany is a new celebration for you. In many parts of the world, Epiphany is even more substantial and important a celebration than Christmas. It's hard to imagine in our Christmasified culture, I think. But Epiphany, and for us the season of ordinary time that follows it, is a time of reflection on the willingness of Jesus not only to come, which is what we celebrate at Christmas, but to be revealed to us. It's a fine distinction, but God did not just send Jesus incognito, just an anonymous blood donor sent to effect our salvation. I'm afraid that for too many Christians, it would have sufficed for Jesus to have been born of a virgin and then to have suffered under Pontius Pilate immediately, crucified, died, and be buried. But the gospel writers spill a lot of ink to give us a picture of the life of Jesus between the cradle and the cross. And that's where Epiphany begins, with the earliest story of young Jesus, with the visit of the Magi. And this is what Epiphany, followed by Lent, reminds us, that God gives Jesus to us to be not just believed in, but known and followed and seen. That Jesus is not just an instrument of God, but that Jesus is true life sent into the world. That the gospel is not just about the magnificence of what God has done in the incarnation and the resurrection, but it is also about the manifestation of God in a humble baptism and a human life. So what words do we associate with Epiphany, with any season in which God makes God's self known to us? I think maybe the words are probably less words and more exclamations. Wow. Let's talk about the Epiphany story in today's gospel reading. Actually, before we look at it, let's consider story. I love stories. I've always loved good books, movies, theater. I love it when someone decides to tell a story. Not just because stories are entertaining or can be diverting. The best stories have a certain power to them, have the ability to forge something new, to open up the world in a new way. One story that I attend to once a year is a movie called It's a Wonderful Life. I watched it again. It's my favorite movie of all time. I don't know if maybe you happened upon or heard about the abridged version of It's a Wonderful Life. Did you hear about this? There was a streaming service, and it's complicated why this exists, but it exists, it is real, you can find it, and the abridged version of It's a Wonderful Life. It is, there's no new material added to it, it's cut, there are things cut out, there's an entire sequence, a very important sequence cut out. The first two-thirds of the movie are identical to what we have always seen, it's unaffected. George Bailey saves his brother's life, saves Mr. Gower, stays in Bedford Falls after his dad passes away, stays in Bedford Falls again after his brother gets married, marries Mary, has the kids, manages the run on the Bailey building and loan, still has that terrible, no good, very bad day where Uncle Billy loses the $8,000 deposit and then goes, jumps off a bridge to save Clarence, who has been sent to save him. So, up to this point, everything's the same. If you are familiar with the movie, what happens next is maybe the most important part. Clarence decides, oh, what George says to Clarence is, it's probably better that I never lived. And so Clarence takes this opportunity to take him on a tour of what his world, his community would look like if he had never been born. Okay, erase that from your memory, though, because in the toll house, in that on the bridge, George and Clarence are getting dried off in front of the stove. Clarence, this is all in the original movie. Clarence talks about how he's his guardian angel sent to help him. Oh, if he just knew how he could help him, he's wondering what he could do. George says to him, only one way you can help me. You don't happen to have 8,000 bucks on you. Hard cut to George running down the street. Merry Christmas, movie house! Merry Christmas, Emporium! Merry Christmas, you wonderful old building and loan! The entire sequence of George's vision of what his world would look like was removed. Apparently in this version, the abridged version, Clarence gave him $8,000, I guess? And he's just done. Miraculous money. Again, the reason it was cut out and that they even have this weird abridged version is not very interesting. I can tell you later if you want. But the result is that it is an entirely different story. It's a completely different story to remove this section of this important movie. The stories we tell and how we tell them are important. Stories give us common language. They give us examples of high virtue, of villainy, meditations on beauty, ways of conceiving truth. And the reason stories do this so effectively is because we need connection. And stories connect us. They connect us on an emotional level. They don't just give us facts. They make us angry. They make us cry. They make us think. They pull us into the moment. They show us what's important. There was once a great king, so great that it was part of his name. Herod the Great. His father had been a trusted friend to Julius Caesar, and that led to Herod's own appointment as governor of a small region of Judea called Galilee. He was tremendously successful in making Galilee a safer place and developing a strong tax base for the Roman Empire. His influence quickly spread to additional regions in the area. Mark Antony came and actually captured Jerusalem in 37 BC. Herod, at that point, was named sole ruler of all Judea because of how successful he had been. A substantial region, if still somewhat marginalized from the major power center of Rome. Herod was probably most famous for his massive building projects, surely the most substantial of which was restoring the temple in Jerusalem, known as the Second Jewish Temple. His finished version was double the size of Solomon's original, and people, especially Jews from all over the world, flocked to see it. Our gospel story today in Matthew 2 plunges us into the world of this same Herod, but invites us to read his story, as all history, in the light of Jesus. The invitation of Epiphany, as with every season of the year, is to read what is going on in the world in the light of Jesus. A group of traveling astrologer magicians, we call them the Magi, visit Herod the Great in Jerusalem as the most likely home for the one that they seek, this newly born king of the Jews. But that is not where the true king will be. Herod's advisors inform him. He will be in a backwater town in this backwater land, Bethlehem. And this king, as the Magi know, is no conquering hero. He is a small child. But Herod the Great fears, that's the word that Matthew used, fears what this child represents. And so he uses his wiles and his cunning to do what Herods always do. He lies, manipulates, and ultimately inflicts great violence to protect himself, his sense of power, and his own ends. Epiphany, in our gospel text this morning, draws us into an alternative way of conceiving of power. Power. At its most basic, power is the ability to get something done, to accomplish something. The question that Epiphany begs is, power in what way? In what way power? One of my favorite writers, Eugene Peterson, had a sentence that has stayed with me for many years. Drawing on John 14:6, Jesus says, "I am the way and the truth and the life." And Eugene Peterson uses that to say, the Jesus truth, only when it is wedded to the Jesus way, produces the Jesus life. The Jesus truth, only when it is wedded to the Jesus way, produces the Jesus life. Epiphany declares the Jesus way. This is what is revealed in Epiphany. Not just that Jesus came, but the way in which he came, with humility, with surprising weakness, with great love. And ultimately, Matthew will show us the way of Jesus is the way of the cross. Matthew drives home the alternative nature of Jesus' kingdom throughout his gospel, and it starts right here. There are two gospel options for you. Here is Herod, and here is Jesus. And understand that the two kingdoms that Matthew presents are not a difference in type, as if Herod rules a physical, political kingdom while Jesus rules some sort of spiritual inner kingdom that you're invited into. The kingdom that Jesus has come to inaugurate is every bit as real and public as Herod's. Herod knows this. Jesus' kingdom will be an alternative to the way of Herod and the way Herod's have always been. Jesus' power will be shown, as Matthew shows us, not in coercive violence or manipulative lies or self-service, but in self-giving love, in resolute truth-telling, in hospitality to strangers, in serving, in healing. Great power, but in a very different way. To be Epiphany people means that we are drawn into that kingdom. That we ourselves become bearers of that kingdom in the way that we live together. In the memorable words of Wendell Berry, rats and roaches live by competition under the laws of supply and demand. It is the privilege of human beings to live under the laws of justice and mercy. But of course we know that most of human society, ruled by our Herods as we are, don't have justice and mercy as our primary organizing principles, though there may be plenty of lip service in that direction. So our community here, together, in this place, here, around the world, the church gathered, we get to forge a different, an alternative path. A way of being together that takes the way of Jesus seriously. So we organize our life together based not on greed or competition or individual rights or privilege or status or other values that our wider society might hold to. We seek instead to gather and live together based on compassion and hospitality and care for the other, and self-giving love, and what we here call sacred and simple. Not just because we think these principles are better than the alternative, but because this is the kingdom of Jesus. This is what we have been drawn into. God has revealed to us who he is through his son, Jesus. And our invitation is to open our eyes and see him, to open our hearts and receive him, to open our lives, to allow him to move us to action, to participate with him in his kingdom, in his way. Epiphany will always remind us that it's not enough for us merely to know who Jesus is. We must also receive him, follow him, and participate with him and the rest of his followers in his kingdom of love and mercy. When my children were preschoolers, I wrote short, two-line responsive prayers for every season of the church. Every night at bedtime, we'd turn the light off in the room, and we would say our prayer before we sang our nightly song. And every Epiphany, this was our prayer. Dear Jesus, thank you for showing yourself to us. Now, show yourself through us. Let that be our prayer this season, and let that be our prayer this moment as we approach the table of grace and mercy.